Shalom, welcome to SJTF. This is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to elevating the souls of Simcha Bat Shlomo, Pesach Ben Dov, Meir Ben Yecheskel, and Yosef Ben Meir. We're going to get to our many questions from our great members shortly. But first, I want to once again speak about what a wonderful world this would be if JTF could reach huge numbers of people with our fantastic Hebrew and English videos. Those of you in the English language movement have had the benefit of seeing what Shlomo, our great administrator and our brilliant leader in our movement, has been doing with our English language videos. You've seen this since the spring now. Our Hebrew videos are actually even better than the English videos. The Hebrew videos that Shlomo has worked on are even higher quality than the English videos. And the English videos that Shlomo has worked on are very, very high quality. You see our campaign on behalf of Mitt Romney and against Barack Hussein Obama. You see how effective, how strong those videos are. They're better than the videos which the Romney campaign, in which people in the Republican National Committee and various PACs are spending hundreds of millions of dollars on. Our videos, with our meager, pathetic budget, are more effective, are stronger, are more compelling than videos that are put together by political professionals who have budgets of hundreds of millions of dollars. I mean, this is the ultimate proof that JTF not only tells the truth, but JTF can tell the truth effectively. Effectively. And convincingly, if only we had the resources we need, and why it's so important that we promote this message as much as possible. You can imagine if we had a real budget of millions of dollars and we could reach all the people of Israel, because if we had a budget of millions of dollars, we would reach most Israeli Jews with our message. Israel's a country of 5.5 million Jews. Most Israeli Jews would get our message on a regular basis if we had a multi-million dollar budget. Can you imagine Israeli Jews on a regular basis seeing the type of high quality, effective, persuasive videos that you have seen in English? Even more effective, our videos in Hebrew are even more effective and even more persuasive. Can you imagine them seeing this on a regular basis, week after week? Can you imagine the impact that this would have on the thinking of the average Israeli Jew? Can you imagine how many Israeli Jews would become religious and do tshuva, would return to the Jewish people after seeing these inspiring videos? Can you imagine how many Israeli Jews would move all the way to the right after seeing these persuasive videos? Can you imagine how many Israeli Jews would get involved in the political process to pressure the leaders and to form a new political movement that will finally address the issues that are essential to Israel's survival? Can you imagine what the impact would be? And of course, we would simultaneously continue with our English language videos, as you've seen in the Romney campaign, what we've been doing for Mitt Romney and against Barack Hussein Osama. Imagine millions and then tens of millions of people being exposed to our English language videos. What an impact that would have on the future of the United States and the Western world, and how they relate to Israel and the Jewish people, and how they relate to all the compelling subjects that affect the survival of the Western world. This would be a much better world if JTF just had the type of budget which for other organizations is a joke. I mean, if we had a $10 million budget, let's say, compared to the UJA, the ADL, the AJC, and all these alphabet soup Jewish establishment trader organizations, a $10 million budget would be a joke. But for us, that would be enough. I just wanted to mention that again, especially when we look at the incredible difference between our uncompromising message and the message of the establishment people, whether it's establishment Jewish groups or whether it's the establishment Republicans in the Romney campaign, how they've been responding. Just look at what they did this week, the Romney campaign. And we have to support Mitt Romney. We have no choice. We have to do everything we can to elect him and to elect Paul Ryan. We have no choice. Because if, God forbid, Barack Hussein Osama is reelected, it will be an unmitigated disaster. But just look at what the Romney campaign did this week. They accepted four debates. Three debates this fall will be between the presidential candidates, between Romney and Barack Hussein Osama. There'll be three presidential debates, and there'll be one vice presidential debate between Paul Ryan and Joe Biden. So that's a total of four debates. All the moderators on all four debates are extreme left-wing, Obama-worshipping so-called reporters. There's not even one reporter there to offer any balance. The Romney campaign, the Romney-Ryan campaign accepted extreme left-wing, Obama-worshipping reporters to be the moderators on all four debates. Now, why would they do this? This is like playing in a rigged game. It's going to be much harder for Romney and Ryan to win the debates when the reporters are going to rig the questions and are going to be against them. And are going to only throw softball questions to Obama and Biden and throw all the biased questions and use biased rules to curtail what Romney and Ryan can say in the debates. You know, when you're a moderator, you have tremendous power over the direction of the debate. You can influence the course of the debate. So why would the Romney-Ryan campaign accept reporters who have done nothing but lie to the American people since day one about Barack Hussein Osama, have done everything to cover up for him, have done everything to protect him, have done everything to promote him, have done everything to mislead and distort and twist every event in Obama's favor, and this is who they pick as the moderators for the debates? This is who they accept? I mean, they at least should have insisted, okay, we have four debates here, two of the debates should be moderated by people from Fox or other, you know, people from the other side, and two of them will be moderated by your extreme left-wing reporters. They could have done that. Or they could have said no moderators, what Newt Gingrich suggested, no moderators. Lincoln-Douglas-style debates with no moderators, just the two candidates get up and debate each other in front of an audience. They could have insisted upon that. They could have insisted upon all types of different formats, which would have eliminated this vicious media bias that rigs the debate. Now they're going to have a harder time winning. It's going to be more difficult to win. I'm not saying it's impossible for them to win the debate. Ronald Reagan faced biased reporters and still beat Jimmy Carter in the debates. And Ronald Reagan beat Walter Mondale in his second debate, at least, in 1984 when he ran for re-election. So it's possible to win the debates anyway. But it's harder when the moderator is on the side of one candidate and everything's going to be rigged in favor of Obama. It's harder to win. And there's a second problem here. The way the media reports on these issues, it's very hard to get your message out. Fox is the only exception, of course. Fox is being fair. But all the other media outlets, all the other major media outlets, NBC, ABC, CBS, CNN, MSNBC, PBS, all of them are so viciously biased. I'll give you an example. Once the debates are over, you have, I don't know, 40, 50, maybe 60 million Americans who will watch portions of the debates live. But you'll always have a lot of Americans who don't watch the debates, who don't watch the convention speeches, who don't bother with any of this, and so they rely on reports that they get afterwards in the news. You know what the media is going to report afterwards. They're going to report that Obama won the debate. No matter what happens, they're going to say Obama won all of the debates. And they're going to even say that Joe Biden beat Paul Ryan in the debate unless Joe Biden completely falls flat on his face, God willing. But you know, that's not likely to happen. The media is almost certainly going to report that all four of the debates were won by Obama and Biden. That's what they did last time. There was one debate where John McCain actually finally got aggressive. He was desperate. He finally got aggressive, and he won that one debate against Obama. There was one debate where he actually started punching back and actually beat Obama in the debate. Not according to the media. According to the media, Obama easily won every debate. According to the media, the debates between Obama and Hillary Sodom Clinton, in those debates, and she won some of those debates. There's no question she won some of those debates, but not according to the media. According to the media, Obama won every single debate. Obama always wins. So when the media reports that Obama won, that's going to give him momentum. And that's going to make people feel that he's winning the debate, that he's the better leader. This is the mentality of the idiots out there that unfortunately have been afforded the right to vote, and they are idiots because a majority of Americans voted to elect Obama in the first place, and everyone who did vote for Obama in the first place really has to have their head examined. But if you, so how do you deal with this situation? You deal with the situation by going after media bias, by saying the media is biased, the media is not giving us a fair hearing. They should attack the media for being biased. Take them head on. The media is sensitive to that charge. They don't want conservatives and Republicans and evangelical Christians boycotting their advertisers. They don't want things like that. They don't want an all-out confrontation with tens of millions of people who are consumers and who can boycott their advertisers. They don't want that problem. The smart thing to do is to say to the media, you are biased. What you're reporting is not news, so at least everybody who watches their broadcast will know that they're getting lies before they even open their mouths. People are forewarned to expect this from them. And it's also good, in terms of psychology, it's also good to show, you know, that the other side has an unfair advantage. That's good. Let them know that this is David versus Goliath. People usually like to side with David, not with Goliath. People like to side with the underdog. Mitt Romney is the underdog in this race because of the news media worshipping of Barack Hussein Osama. But that's not happening. No one is attacking the media and calling them on all of their bias and all their vicious reporting. I mean, you've got the Obama campaign accusing Mitt Romney of murdering a woman, of causing a woman to die of cancer. You've got Barack Hussein Osama. This is just another example. Barack Hussein Osama had the chutzpah to three times mention that Mitt Romney put his dog in a kennel and tied the kennel to the roof of the car. And Mitt Romney did do that on a trip that he took in the early 1980s. He put his dog in a kennel and he tied the kennel to the roof of the car. Okay. Whether you like that or don't like that, if you think it's inhumane, whatever. The dog survived, but you could say it was cruel or whatever. You could say that if you want to, whatever you want to say. Three times Obama mentioned that. No one, not the Romney campaign, not the Republicans, not the media, no one mentioned that Barack Hussein Obama killed dogs and ate them. He admitted that he used to kill dogs and eat them. Yes, he killed dogs and ate dog meat. Now, I think that's a little more extreme than just putting your dog in a kennel and taking him for a ride on the roof of your car. And the dog after that lived years. The dog lived a happy life years after that experience with Romney. So he wasn't killing the dog and eating him like Obama did. Obama, like a jungle barbarian, would kill dogs and eat them. And that nobody mentions. I mean, somebody should have said, oh, you think that's bad? Why don't you make a joke about how you used to kill dogs and eat them? I mean, that's just one out of a zillion examples. No one exposes Obama's real past, his real history. The fact that he couldn't go to Indonesian schools if he wasn't an Indonesian citizen. Indonesia requires you to be a citizen to be registered in their schools, and they don't accept dual citizens, so he had to renounce his American citizenship to become a student in their schools. Did he ever become an American? Did he ever, after renouncing his American citizenship, if he did that, did he ever become an American citizen again? Did he ever get it back? What happened? What's this whole process here? Why is he so anxious to cover up and hide school records, other records? Could it be because he was accepted as a foreign exchange student and a foreign citizen? When he was in Columbia University, when he was in Harvard, did he get scholarships and acceptance as a foreign exchange student? Which means he was a foreign citizen? If that's true, he's ineligible to be president of the United States. And again, I don't know what the arrangement was, but I do know he's not releasing those records. And he spends millions of dollars to prevent those records from being released and revealed. So something's very fishy there. And we do know that he registered in those schools in Indonesia as a Muslim student. He was registered as a Muslim. His religion was listed as Islam in two different schools in Indonesia. And there's no question that he's a Muslim. That nobody mentions, except for JTF. And JTF mentions it effectively. There are other people on the fringes that speak about it, but they don't do it effectively. JTF's videos are so effective and so compelling and have such a great punch to them. I mean, after watching a JTF video, a lot of Obama supporters, unless they're complete, you know, unless they're completely anti-American, you have a lot of average white, stupid people who might support Obama for whatever ignorant reasons. I think a lot of them would have second thoughts after seeing our videos. And you know, the Obama campaign is going around saying that Mitt Romney's plan is to raise taxes on the middle class. A complete lie. Mitt Romney wants to reduce taxes for everyone. For everyone. But they say his plan will raise taxes on the middle class. When in fact, the person who's raising taxes on the middle class is Barack Hussein Obama with Obamacare. They're doing commercials, tens of millions of dollars worth of commercials, saying Romney is raising taxes by $2,000 on the middle class so he can pay for tax cuts for millionaires and billionaires. Complete lie. If anything, Romney's plan is rigged in favor of the middle class and against the millionaires and billionaires. He has a $250,000 cutoff on some of his cuts, like in capital gains tax, for instance. If you make more than $250,000 a year, you don't benefit from his cut in capital gains tax and his elimination of various other taxes, bank interest and other taxes that he wants to give relief only to the middle class for. So, I mean, these are just complete lies. Complete lies. And I don't see the Romney campaign responding well. I've seen debates between Romney staff and Obama staff on various programs on TV. And the Obama staff repeats the lies. And the Romney staff, the Romney campaign aides, they just don't respond effectively. And so I'm concerned about that. They're saying that the Romney-Ryan Medicare plan will cost seniors $64,000 a year. The Romney-Ryan Medicare plan does not affect a single senior, a single person 55 or over. It only affects future generations, and the future generations are not going to pay more but less because there's going to be competition. Competition leads to lower prices, not higher prices. But what Obama has done, he says there are independent studies that show that Romney is going to raise taxes on the middle class, that Romney is going to cost more money for Medicare recipients. Who are these independent studies? Obama campaign staff people do studies, people who work for the Democrat Party and the Obama campaign, they do studies, and then they say it's an independent study. And the media lets them get away with this. And even worse, the Romney campaign and the Republicans let them get away with this. What would happen if JTF had the commercials of Obama making racist attacks on white people all over the TV? And what would happen to Obama's numbers then? Showing Obama in his own voice calling white people, talking about how angry he is at white people and how white folks will do you and how arrogant white folks are. All the anti-white racism in his own book that he read from his own book, in his own voice. If we had that video turned into a campaign commercial, what do you think that would do to Obama's numbers? What do you think it would do to Obama's numbers if we showed the American people something that 95% of the American people have never seen? The actual records from his schools in Indonesia showing he's a Muslim. What do you think it would do to Obama's campaign if we had on those commercials pictures showing Obama's connection to Al Sharpton, Jesse Jackson, Jeremiah Wright, Louis Farrakhan, showing that there is a connection here to all of these racists, anti-Semites, enemies of America? And then at the end of the commercial saying, is this who you want to give a second term to when he won't have to face the voters ever again? Can we afford that risk? That is the one thing the media and the Obama campaign don't want. They have special units in the Obama campaign to put down any suggestion. The minute anyone suggests Obama's a Muslim, they actually have special units to put down that suggestion and ridicule it right away and get their friends in the media to ridicule it right away. That's how worried they are about that. And yet the Republicans and Romney and Ryan and all the others, they just don't get it. They think that they have to run a politically correct campaign because otherwise the media is going to get upset at them and saying this is not nice and this is not fair. No, it's not nice and it's not fair. Obama can run commercials lying and saying that Romney murdered a woman with cancer and all other types of lying commercials, but the Romney campaign is not even allowed to respond with the truth. Wouldn't you be happier to wake up one morning and hear that JTF suddenly has $10 million in the bank and suddenly you see JTF getting exposure all over the place? You see the people of Israel being exposed to JTF's message. You see tens of millions of Americans being exposed to JTF's message. Wouldn't that be a wonderful day for Israel, for America, and for the world? Would this world be the same world if that happened? Anyway, someday, hopefully that will come true. God willing, Bezrat Hashem. We need your prayers. We need you to pray for us to succeed in our efforts to spread the word and to become a mass movement. We need you to help us spread our videos and to be active on the forum, make the forum an inviting place so the new people that you see joining every week, because we get new members all the time, the new members we see joining and all the other people that are coming on as guests, the thousands of people come on every week as guests. You can see that in the statistics on the main page. You see the thousands of people coming on as guests. And when I say on the main page, I mean on the main page of the forum, not the main page of the website. There's a statistic thing in the lower part of the page where you can see the stats. You know, making the forum a better place, posting on the forum, making it inviting, spreading the word about our videos, putting up our videos yourselves as well, commenting, favoriting, and promoting the videos, liking the videos, doing it both on YouTube and on Facebook, all of that helps. And of course, we need financial support. We really need as much financial support as we can get, because just to do the basic things, we have to have a budget. Our budget is a joke. The more funds we get, the more we're able to do. The more we're able to do to tell the truth to the world in a world full of lies, because this is a generation which is only being fed lies. And we're one of the only sources of truth. And so I want to thank the wonderful members of JTF who do help us, who go to our main page and click on the Donate Now button. On the top right of the main page, there's a Donate Now button that you can click on and help us with, help us very conveniently. You can help us with your credit card. And I want to thank the wonderful JTF, and there are JTFers who generously do that. Thank God, Baruch Hashem. And I want to thank the wonderful JTFers who also send to our post office box, JTF PO Box 650327, Fresh Meadows, New York, 11365. They send to our post office box checks, money orders, and cash donations in order to enable us to do what we have to do. I want to thank all of you who do that. God bless you. May Hashem bless you and your loved ones, both in this world and in the next. You're supporting truth and you're supporting something that is so desperately needed in this world. May the day come. May the day come when we're able to spread this message all over the place. And I want to end with one final note. I know this has been a very long opening, but I wanted to speak to our people about this. Barack Hussein Osama has already promised that he's going to begin a massive campaign to squeeze Israel to commit national suicide as soon as he's reelected. Once he doesn't have to face the voters again, you know what's going to happen. There's going to be unprecedented, massive pressure on Israel, not only not to defend herself and survive against Muslim Nazi Iran and a nuclear Iran, God forbid. But aside from that threat of a Holocaust, he's also going to threaten Israel with going to Holocaust borders, going to the Auschwitz lines of the pre-1967 borders. He's already said so. He said that Israel has to go back to the 1967 borders that are only 6 to 9 miles wide. Completely insane, indefensible, suicidal borders. And we know the history of Israel accepting insane things, especially when they're under massive pressure. And they'll be under massive pressure if, God forbid, Obama's reelected. Now, what about Romney? Well, I don't trust any politician. But from what he says, he appears to be that he's much better on these issues. On these issues, I mean, he clearly has said that Israel has a right to defend herself against Iran, and the United States should stand behind Israel if Israel defends herself against Iran. That means he's in effect saying he would support an Israeli strike on Iran. That's what he's saying. And Paul Ryan, by the way, has said the same thing. Now, if they mean it, if they really do it once they're in office, who knows? But they're saying they're going to do that. And I really do believe that they, unlike Obama, view a nuclear Iran as the number one threat to the security of the United States right now. And they're correct about that. And here's what they write about the so-called Palestinian issue. Of course, there is no Palestinian issue. But anyway, here's what they write, and I quote, and this is, I'm reading from Romney, from MittRomney.com, from his official website. They have a special section called Israel that they devote to Israel to explain how they claim that Romney will be pro-Israel. And here's what they say, quote, President Obama for too long has been in the grip of several illusions. One is that the Israeli-Palestinian dispute is the central problem in the region. This has been disproved repeatedly by events, most recently and most dramatically by the eruption of the Arab Spring, but it nevertheless led the administration to believe that distancing the United States from Israel was a smart move that would earn us credits in the Arab world and somehow bring peace closer. The record proves otherwise. The key to negotiating a lasting peace is an Israel that knows it will be secure, unquote. Okay, well, of course, that's baloney. There's never going to be a negotiated peace, and there's never going to be a lasting peace between Israel and the Muslims. When the Messiah comes, there's going to be peace, because the Messiah is going to destroy all enemies of Israel. But until then, there's not going to be peace between Israel and the Muslim world. That's just never going to happen. They're never going to accept the existence of Israel, so that's nonsense. But Romney is saying here, he doesn't view this as a burning issue. This is not the central problem in the region. To Obama, the central problem in the region is Israel's existence. He wants Israel out of the way, that filthy Muslim Jew-hating animal. Whereas Mitt Romney is saying this is not the main problem in the region. It's been proven repeatedly that this is not... So Romney, this is not the problem. So Romney doesn't even view this as the burning issue. He views a nuclearized Iran as the burning issue and various other things as the burning issue. So I don't believe, at least in the beginning, I don't believe you're going to see an obsessive campaign by a President Romney to pressure Israel to commit suicide. I just don't see it. Unless he completely is fooling all of us and this is all just a hoax. But I really think that he really believes that this is just not the main issue. This is not the main concern right now. And he... Romney is going to owe the evangelical Christians his victory. If he wins, the evangelicals are going to be responsible for his victory. So he's got to worry about that when he wants to run for a second term. That's good for us. So we have every reason, whether it's preventing Israel from committing suicide and creating a so-called Palestine state, or whether it's a nuclearized Iran, we have every reason as supporters of Israel to be determined to elect Mitt Romney and to be determined to defeat Barack Hussein Osama. It is a matter of survival. And of course, as far as the United States, the survival of the United States, I think it's obvious that Obama is destroying the United States. Anyway, again, I want to thank the people who have helped us. Help us, get involved with us. Don't just say you agree with us. Don't just say you like what we're doing. Don't just applaud what we're doing. Don't do what people did with Rabbi Kahana, where a lot of people said, we're behind you. And Rabbi Kahana used to say, yeah, they're behind me. They're all the way behind me. Way behind me. In other words, it was just all talk. Let's get moving here. Help us. Help us promote the videos. Help us with the forum. Help us financially with contributions. Help us. I don't think there's any cause more worthy than this. I think we've proven that our message is a good one, an effective one, and the only problem is that we don't have the funds to get it out to huge numbers of people. We are reaching thousands of people every week. Thousands of people every week. Remember, 2 weeks ago I told you we have one video I just use this as an example. We have one video with 25,000 views. It's called the best anti-Obama video ever. I told you that 2 weeks ago. Now there are already over 38,000 views on that video. More than 13,000 views in the past 2 weeks on that video alone. So we're certainly reaching people. I mean, we certainly are, and that's just one video on YouTube, and we have thousands of videos on YouTube and on other sites as well. So we certainly are reaching people. But it's not enough. We have to reach not thousands or tens of thousands, but millions of people every week. That's what we've got to do. Until then, we got to do what we can and work with what we've got to try to change things. Because it does make a difference. But, our goal has to be to reach an ever larger audience, and we need your help for that, and to spread the word ever more, and to make this movement grow both here and in Israel. We need your help for that. And that's a very blessed thing to help us with that. Anyway, let's get to our many questions from our great JTFers. I'm sorry that this went on very long, that this, that I really spent a lot of time on the opening this week, but I thought I just wanted to bring these subjects up. I thought it was important. We start with the great Dr. Dan, the voice of reason and common sense and logic, our great global moderator, who writes, and I quote, "What will happen with the remaining Gentile quarters of the Old City once there is true Torah Jewish sovereignty over Jerusalem?" Unquote. Great question, Dr. Dan. Unfortunately, the people in those quarters in Jerusalem that you're referring to are mostly Arabs who are Jew haters, and they're either they're Arabs or they're people who claim to be Armenians and Greeks and various other groups, Christian groups, but they support the Muslims. They're pro-Muslim. They're puppets of the Muslims. They support the PLO, they support Fatah, they support Hamas, they support anyone who's against Israel. They're puppets of the Muslims. Some of them, of course, are afraid. There's a gun in the back of their head. But whatever the reason is, they are enemies of the Jewish state. They've set themselves up as enemies of the Jewish state, and they work to destroy Israel, and they work with our enemies. So we have to have an aggressive campaign to encourage them to leave. That's part of our program, to encourage the enemies of the Jewish people to get out, to leave the land of Israel. And that is something that we will aggressively pursue. So we will turn those areas into Jewish areas in Jerusalem, God willing. Thank you very much, Dr. Dan. And now we go to the great Brennan fan, another fantastic JTFer who writes, and I quote, "The media completely ignored the theater shooter Holmes was targeting women and girls because only Schwarz's gays can be hate crime victims," unquote. That is very, very true, Brennan fan. The fact is the news media has certain groups that are victims and that they make a big deal over, whether it's gays or blacks or Arabs or Muslims. Those are the groups that if you dare even say something, if you dare open your mouth and tell the truth, even a little bit of the truth about them, the media gets hysterical. But when they slaughter people, when they slaughter innocent people, the media all of a sudden is silent. There's no problem with that. Brennan fan, who are the vast majority of rapists in America? Black men. Does the media ever say that? Over 90% of the rapists in Israel are Arabs, are Arab Muslims. You think the media in Israel mentions that? Who commits most of the murders in America? Black men. The vast majority of murderers in America are black men. In Israel, obviously, over 90% of the murderers also are Arab Muslims. You never see the media speak about those things. I mean, it's just... And all the feminists who supposedly, they're so worried about rape, most of them are so ugly, nobody would, they claim men are touching them and men want to touch them, they should be so lucky. I mean, most of them are so damn ugly that, a gorilla in a zoo wouldn't want to touch them. But if they want to be honest, who are the people that really rape and abuse and target women and can commit violence against women? I mean, in America, it's blacks and Arabs are the two biggest groups that do that. And as far as religion, we know what Muslims do to women. the brutality of Islam toward women is beyond the pale. But the media will never mention that. You're absolutely right, Brennan Fan. Great point again. And now we go to the great Yimach Shmo to Obama, who writes, and I quote, "Dear Chaim, what is your opinion on George Strait?" Unquote. Yimach Shmo to Obama, I apologize. I don't know that much about him. I know he's a country music singer. I just vaguely know that he's a country music singer, but I don't know enough about him. I mean, if he just sings nice songs, country music style, certainly I wouldn't have anything against that. That's fine. But I just don't know enough about him to really comment. I apologize. Anyway, thanks for the question. And now we go to the great EB22, who writes, and I quote, "Please discuss Paul Ryan's positions on Israel, the Iranian situation, and foreign policy in general," unquote. Okay, EB, great question, and this is something I dealt with extensively in my opening. Paul Ryan's positions seem to be similar to Mitt Romney's positions. They're not our positions. I mean, you know what we want to do. We want the Arabs out of Israel. We want a lot of things that Romney and Ryan won't stand for, won't say they support. However, on the issue of Iran, Paul Ryan and Mitt Romney, and I've heard Paul Ryan say this repeatedly, have stated that a nuclearized Iran, God forbid, is the number one threat to the United States and U.S. security in the world today. That this is the premier threat to America in the world today. Not to Israel, obviously it's a threat, but they're saying to America it's the number one threat. Now that is a very sensible, logical conclusion. And as far as their positions on Israel, both have stated, Romney and Ryan have both stated, and I quoted, in fact, in my opening from Romney's own website, both Romney and Ryan have repeatedly stated they're against pressuring Israel to make concessions, to make suicidal concessions. So, let's hope they mean what they say. And certainly we have every reason to do everything we can to support them and elect them. Based upon the threat from Barack Hussein Osama, and based upon the fact that they are saying a lot of things which would be a lot better than what we have now. And don't forget, as I mentioned in my opening, if they are elected, they're going to owe their election to the evangelical Christians. They can't win without the evangelical Christians. So that is something that we can always hold them to. Because they are going to want to get reelected. Anyway, thank you very much, EB. And now we go to LKZ, who is an active member of our forum. And LKZ writes, and I quote, "Liberals always tell me they don't care about politics, yet fight for their side. How does this happen and how can it be changed?" Unquote. I don't know. I don't think we're going to stop leftists from fighting for what they want to do to the world. I think we just have to effectively counter them. We have to effectively fight against them and defeat them. There's just no other way if we want to have a decent world. We have to defeat everything they stand for, because everything they stand for is the wrong position and a position that will make this world a nightmare. They're already turning the world into a nightmare. Anyway, thank you for the question, LKZ. And now we go to the great Mr. VSS, who writes, and I quote, "Chaim, please educate, inform, and enlighten us about the tragedy of the SS St. Louis," unquote. All right. The SS St. Louis was a ship in 1939, which is 6 years after Hitler, Yimach Shmo, took power in Germany. In 1939, it was a ship of 930, mostly German Jewish refugees. They were all Jewish refugees. Most of them were from Germany, and some of them were also from other European countries. These 930 Jewish refugees were attempting to escape from Nazi Europe, Nazi-occupied Europe. The U.S., under Franklin Delano Roosevelt, Yimach Shmo v'zichro, may his name and memory be obliterated, refused to allow them to enter. And in fact, when the ship attempted to enter in Miami, it was in Florida, it was off the Florida coast, They actually fired on the ship. They actually fired a warning shot to keep the ship away. In other words, they were threatening to violently even sink the ship and kill the people on the ship to prevent them from entering the United States waters. In other words, 930 Jewish refugees, men, women, and children, were sent back to Nazi Europe to be exterminated. This happened under Roosevelt, who had gotten the support of 85-90% of the Jewish vote. American Jews were criminally silent and continued to support Roosevelt when he did this. And that was a precursor to what they did during the Holocaust when Roosevelt's policies led to the murder of over 6 million Jews, Hashem Yikom Damam, during the Holocaust. So we saw criminal behavior from the American Jewish community, unforgivable behavior from American Jews, supporting someone who murdered millions of our brothers and sisters in Europe. And this is the same thing that American Jews did under Bill Clinton when he was president and he was pressuring Israel during the Oslo agreements and pressuring Israel during the Y agreements to surrender land to Arafat and the PLO Nazi terrorists. Bill Clinton had what he called the Clinton Plan in 2000, where he demanded that Israel surrender, go back to the pre-67 suicide borders and give up Jerusalem. That was the Clinton Plan. Bill and Hillary Sodom Clinton had a plan to get Israel to commit national suicide, the same plan that Barack Hussein Osama advocates now. American Jews did not protest and did not object and voted for and kept voting for Clinton and supporting Clinton and supported Hillary Sodom Arafat despite these evil policies. So, you know, that same year they elected Hillary Sodom Arafat to the U.S. Senate with overwhelming Jewish support in New York State. So, you know, this is a very, very shameful record. It's the American Jewish response that really enrages me. I feel righteous indignation when I think of what happened to our people during the Holocaust while American Jews sat back and did nothing. And you see the same thing playing out today. 78% of the Jewish vote went for Barack Hussein Osama in 2008. Most Jews, unless there's a miracle, most Jews are going to vote for him again in November. It'll probably be less than 78% this time, but he's still going to get most of the Jewish vote. What a disgrace. What a bunch of self-hating traitors. That's all I can say. Anyway, thank you, Mr. VSS. And now the great Imachnik writes, and I quote, "What is your opinion on Ayn Rand? Is her type of conservatism something you believe in?" Unquote. No. She was a militant atheist, and she was a believer in selfishness, in libertarian selfishness, the type of arrogant, evil selfishness that we see from the Ron Paul and Rand Paul zombies now. So I certainly do not believe in what she advocated. She was pro-Israel, and she was she referred to the Arabs as primitive savages, and she was pro-Israel. But still, her atheistic philosophy, her hatred of religion, and her selfishness, her glorifying of selfishness, which she calls libertarianism, in other words, not caring about any other human beings, just getting yourself ahead at all costs, I consider it to be the antithesis of Torah Judaism and of morality. Anyway, thank you, Imachnik. And now we go to the great Say No to Islam, who writes, and I quote, "What is your opinion on 1. Sikh massacre in Wisconsin that took place lately," unquote. I think it was terrible. I think it was a terrible tragedy. 6 people were murdered and other people were injured by a Nazi beast who murdered them, whatever his crazy reasons were. The Sikhs are not Muslims. The Sikhs hate the Muslims and fight with the Muslims. The Sikhs are actually play a prominent role in the Indian Army fighting the Muslims. So I think that this massacre was terrible. And the Say No to Islam now asks about Henrik Verwoerd. I think you mean Heinrich with a D. Heinrich Verwoerd. Verwoerd, I think. I think it's Heinrich Verwoerd, if I'm correct. Maybe I'm mistaken, but I think that's who you mean. He was the Prime Minister of South Africa. He was assassinated in the 1960s. I don't remember the year, but it was sometime in the 60s. I was a kid. I remember it was obviously big news then. He was assassinated. and he was one of the founders of apartheid in South Africa. I think that he taught us a very important lesson. While he was prime minister, they started enacting all types of sanctions against South Africa and Rhodesia, another apartheid state in Southern Africa. And despite the fact that the world and the UN enacted all types of sanctions against South Africa and Rhodesia, they continued to be very wealthy communities. The sanctions did not stop them from dealing on the black market and continuing to prosper as wealthy communities. The white communities in South Africa and in Rhodesia were among the wealthiest people in the world. So if that's true for South Africa and Rhodesia, Israel also can prosper, even if there are sanctions. That's the lesson we should learn from that. And now three, Henry Ford, yimach shmo. Yeah, absolutely, yimach shmo to Henry Ford. He was a Nazi. I mean, he was someone who reproduced the Protocols of the Elders of Zion and other Nazi publications. He was a vicious Jew hater. And the Ford Foundation, by the way, to this day, is an anti-Semitic, vicious, left-wing foundation, despicable foundation. So it's a horrible, he's a horrible, evil person from a horrible, evil family. Even though they claimed later on to have changed all lives, they haven't changed at all. And four, Bobby Fischer, yimach shmo. Bobby Fischer, the chess champion, is actually someone who was Jewish. His mother was actually Jewish, and he became a Nazi. I mean, he literally was a Nazi. He expressed admiration for Hitler and the Holocaust. He tried to deny that he was Jewish. He was an outright Nazi. He obsessively did broadcasts on the international Jewish conspiracy and how the Jews are against him, and congratulated Osama bin Laden after 9/11. So, you know, another example of the unbelievably sick, self-hating Jews that we have in this generation. And part of the problem is, you know, the Muslims get rid of their traitors. They don't tolerate that. When there's someone betrays them, they get rid of them. Just throwing it out. I'm not saying anything because you know what a law-abiding citizen I am. But what if, I'm just theoretically throwing it out, what if Jews had a hit squad to take care of Jewish traitors? You think the Jewish people would be a more healthy, normal people if someone was doing that, dealing with these sick, cancerous viruses that call themselves of Semitic extraction that want to destroy their own people? You think the Jews might be a little bit of more of a normal people if they had people to deal with these traitors and teach them a lesson? Just asking the question. I'm not advocating it, of course, because as you know, I'm a law-abiding citizen. Anyway, thank you very much. Say no to Islam. And now, and by the way, Bobby Fischer, thank God, is dead now. But unfortunately, there are many other of these vile subhuman creatures of Semitic extraction that are still walking the face of the earth, unfortunately. And now we go to the great Mumon 613, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, on a personal note, do you have any hobbies or interests which you would like to share with us? Keep up the good work, unquote. Great question, Mumon. If I tell you what my hobbies, what my hobby is, of course I don't have as much time, I don't have a lot of time, but if I tell you what my hobbies are, I don't know what people are going to think. I mean, I love to ride bicycles. I love riding bicycles and getting in the outdoors. I love the outdoors and I love riding bicycles when I can get out. But I love more than anything on my spare time, aside from studying Torah, of course, but that's not a hobby. That's a life pursuit, studying Torah. But I love, as in terms of a hobby, I love seeing pictures of the land of Israel, seeing beautiful pictures of the land of Israel, every aspect of the land of Israel. I love seeing the pictures of the mountains, the deserts, the valleys, the cities, the towns, the people. I love seeing pictures of the land of Israel, the animals in Israel, the birds in Israel, the natural scenery of Israel, everything about the land of Israel. I love seeing those pictures. I just love looking at them and just, of course, I wish I was there, seeing them and inhaling the pure air of the Holy Land. But since I'm not allowed to go there all these years, The next best thing is I like to look at them. And I just love seeing what a beautiful land God has given his people. Anyway, thank you very much for the question, Muman, and thank you for everything you do for us on the forum. And now the great Maimonides writes, and I quote, "What should be done to stop the self-immolations of Jews in Israel?" Unquote. Well, you know, the two Jews who have done, I think two people have done this. One of them died. The two people who have done this were part of this Occupy Wall Street, the Israeli version of Occupy Wall Street. They're doing this to protest the fact that Israel is not a communist, even more of a communist country, and more of a communist economy. They're crazy. They're insane. This is what happens when you don't have Jewish values and Jewish education in the land of Israel. Complete insanity. But the things that they were doing this for, first of all, you're not allowed to do something like this, period. But the things they were doing this for, the cause they were doing this for, is also an evil cause. Anyway, thank you very much, Maimonides. And now the great Selhar, who is very active on both the Hebrew and the English forums, writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, can you describe a scenario of an Israeli strike on Iran and a following conflict, results, casualties, damage, etc.?" Unquote. Selhar, I think you know that that depends upon how Israel carries out the strike. If Israel decisively, quickly, aggressively strikes without concern for so-called civilian, Muslim civilians, who are supposed to be innocent, supposedly, and of course they're not innocent, they support the destruction of the Jewish people. If Israel does what she has to do quickly and decisively, it'll be much less painful. I think that Israel actually faces, Selhar, a greater threat if she strikes and destroys Iran's nuclear program. I think the conventional response, because Iran is going to fire missiles at Israel in response, but I actually think that the missiles that will come from Hezbollah in Lebanon may be a greater threat than the missiles that will come from Iran. I actually think Hezbollah's missiles may turn into an even greater threat. We saw in the second Lebanon war what the damage that Hezbollah is capable of doing, because we've allowed them to build up an inventory of thousands and thousands of missiles. So I think that Israel should stage a preemptive strike, not only against Iran, but also against Hezbollah, because Hezbollah has already promised that they're going to get involved if this happens. I think Israel should immediately stage massive bombing raids simultaneously on Iran's nuclear bomb-making program and simultaneously on the Hezbollah strongholds in Lebanon, and the Israeli intelligence knows where many of them are, on their supply lines, on their strongholds, on their headquarters, a massive bombing campaign against them, preemptive bombing campaign against them, without concern for so-called civilian casualties. Give it to them. Really let them have it. If Israel did that, there would be far fewer casualties. Israel could really devastate both Hezbollah and Iran, and take care of two problems very effectively. Of course, there are going to be areas where Hezbollah can escape, and you just need a few people in some remote area of Lebanon to continue firing missiles. Of course, there are going to be incidents like that, but it won't be as effective as the massive coordinated attack that Hezbollah can launch if Israel just sits there and allows them to attack first and allows them to hit Israeli targets. That is really stupid, and unfortunately that's probably what Netanyahu is going to allow them to do. In any event, even if we lose hundreds of people, God forbid, even if hundreds of people are killed, God forbid, and I don't think that has to happen. I think it's very possible we could have much fewer casualties. But even if hundreds of people are killed, God forbid, that is as painful as that is, and it's very painful. Every Jew that is murdered, it's very, very painful. But it is far preferable to have that than to have a nuclear Iran with the threat of a nuclear Holocaust. So the Israeli strike on Iran must take place. Iran must be stopped. And I hope and pray that this cowardly Israeli government that should have done this years ago finally takes action. I hope and pray that they do. Anyway, thank you very much, Selhar. And now, the great Meir Kat writes, and I quote, "We all agree that FDR is a pig, yimach shmo v'zichro, but really, can we really say that even one of the modern presidents would accept the refugees?" Unquote. Meir Kat, you have a point, but I think Roosevelt was an especially vicious Jew-hating animal. It's not just the issue of the St. Louis and the refugees. It's the issue of how he supported and encouraged the British to turn Jews away from the land of Israel and sink a ship. You know, the British actually sunk a ship and murdered all the Jewish refugees on a ship that was trying to get into the land of Israel. Would all modern American presidents have done the same thing, followed the same policy of supporting murdering Jewish refugees in the middle of the Mediterranean Sea and preventing them from getting into the land of Israel? I don't know. And have refused to bomb the rail lines leading to Auschwitz and the Nazi concentration camps so that millions of Jews would be guaranteed, it would be guaranteed that millions of Jews would be exterminated? Would all of the modern presidents have done that, which was Roosevelt's policy and which was Winston Churchill's policy? Would all of them have done that? I don't know. It's possible that they, it's possible, yes. Possible, yes. So, what you're basically saying just points out the fact that the real guilty party here, as much as of a Jew hater, as much of a Jew hater and a mass murderer as Roosevelt was, and he was that, American Jews are the ones who in the end have to answer for the fact that they allowed this to happen. Because even Roosevelt would have taken action and would have stopped the Holocaust if American Jews had applied the proper pressure. He wouldn't have had a choice. It's American Jews who are guilty when it comes to this issue. Anyway, thank you, Meir Kat. And now we go to the great Tag Mechir Tzedek, who writes, and I quote, "Is there a way to resolve the energy crisis, or should it be left entirely to the free market to decide?" Unquote. Excellent question, Tag Mechir. No, this should not be left entirely to the free market, even though I am an advocate of free markets. And I do believe the free market has to play a role, but I don't believe it should be left entirely to the free market for one reason. I believe that everything should be left to the free market, unless it affects national security. If it's something that affects national security and national survival, the Constitution gives the government the right to take action if it's a security issue, if it's a national security issue and an issue of national survival. U.S. dependence on Muslim terrorist nations for oil endangers America's survival. Under Barack Hussein Obama, even though the price of oil and gas, even though the price of gas has doubled at the gas pump, doubled under his presidency, you would think that that would lead to us becoming much less dependent because the price is much higher, people would use less oil, it would incur, also the fact that this oil is so expensive, that should encourage domestic people to want to go and explore because now there's much more of an incentive. Oil is so expensive, that means you make, if you're an oil producer, you make more profit, so people should be drilling in America. He has stopped all of that. And so even though the price of gas has doubled, we're still 20% more dependent on Saudi Arabia than we were when Obama took office. I mean, this is unbelievable. You couldn't do worse than what he is doing. And Republican presidents were also terrible on this issue. The fact is, this should be a tremendous national security priority to end our dependence on oil. Period. To end our dependence on oil. Why do I say on oil? I mean, what's wrong if we use American oil? The problem is, as long as oil has value, the Arabs and the Muslims are going to be making a lot of money. They're going to continue to make a lot of money. Even if America buys less from them, other nations will continue to buy from them. And so that's a continuing, ongoing threat to the world. That means Islam is continuing to be funded. And the Muslims can continue to have a huge birth rate, and the Muslims can continue to do the dangerous things that they're doing. Only if oil were put out of business, if oil, and this is something not the Democrats, Republicans, nobody speaks about this, but if oil were no longer part of the mix, that would put the Arabs and Muslims out of business. That would really cripple the Islamic threat in a decisive way. And that should be the real objective of energy policy. And that's something neither candidate speaks about, neither party speaks about, and it's unfortunate. But as bad as both parties and both candidates are on this issue, like every other issue, like on every other issue, Mitt Romney is far preferable to Obama. What Obama's doing couldn't be worse. Mitt Romney is certainly better on this issue, as he is on all of the other issues. Anyway, thank you, Tag Mechir. And now, curious person who is new to the forum, welcome to our forum, writes, and I quote, should Israel permanently boycott the Olympics in light of the IOC's typical anti-Israel and anti-Jewish stance, unquote. Absolutely. Absolutely. Why would Israel want to play with people that want to exterminate the Jewish people, like Iranian so-called athletes and Muslim athletes? Why would Israel want to deal with these people? Why would any self-respecting Jew want to play games and be sportsmen in front of opposing people like this, as if they're decent human beings, and we're all God's children, we're all decent human beings? Well, I mean, give me a break. Many of the nations, if not most of them, that attend these events want Israel exterminated. They want a Holocaust against the Jewish people. Israel should have nothing to do with this. Nothing to do with it. Thank you very much, curious person. And now the great "we was loving each other," writes, and I quote, if all of your relatives are deceased, is suicide wrong from a non-Bible perspective, e.g., chronic depression that does not respond to treatment, unquote. First of all, I don't believe that there is a non-Bible perspective to this or to anything else in life. How can we separate this from the Bible? Someone who commits suicide wants to get out of this world. This world is depressing them or bothering them or doing something to them, causing them pain, either physical pain or mental pain or both. And so they want to get out of this world. They want to leave this world because they hate the world. What they don't realize is they're not going to go and then just rest in the ground and that's it, and they're resting in peace. That's not going to work. Someone who commits suicide is going to be punished, is going to go to a much worse place. Suicide is a terrible, terrible sin. God gave us a beautiful, magnificent world. If someone is depressed, there are people who are depressed, maybe they're chronically depressed, they have to try different things to get out of it. They should try, and you're saying they're not responding to treatment, they should try different treatments. They should never give up. They should try different things. They should try a different life. If they're Jewish, they should try a Jewish Torah life. They're depressed to the point of wanting to commit suicide anyway. Why not try it? Why? What do they have to lose? But suicide is not the answer. God forbid, that's the craziest thing you could do. This is such a privilege that God gives us. He gives us a chance in this world, in the short life we have in this world. And it's a very short life. He gives us a golden opportunity here to earn eternal life in a world of paradise that we cannot even begin to comprehend. And if anyone thinks that this is a pipe dream that I'm talking about, study it. Study Judaism and study Torah and study the Bible and see that the things that are said in the Bible do come true. The prophecies do come true. And study what is yet to come. Because the world is going to change. And it's going to change for the better. But the worst thing to do is to surrender. The worst thing to do is to give up. The worst thing to do is to cut off one's life that God has given us. That's the worst possible sin. This is the ultimate privilege that God gives somebody to be in this world. If circumstances are depressing somebody, change the circumstances. I know it's not easy. Of course it's not easy. Life is not easy. Life is very hard. It's very hard. But running away and committing suicide will not improve things. It'll only make things much worse. Much worse. That person will go into a world of terrible torture for having committed such a terrible sin. So, I would urge the person to consider drastically changing what they're doing in life and try other things that are positive, of course, other things that are positive and that from a Jewish perspective, if they're Jewish and if they're Gentile, then there are a lot of things that the righteous Gentiles can do as well to make this a better world. There are many things people could do. many things people could do to make this a better world. Try to help people. Try to help a good cause. Try to help people. Try to make this a better world. Try to devote yourself to making this a better world. There are many, many things people could do in the world. And so, this is never a solution. Never. God forbid. God forbid. Anyway, thank you very much. We was loving each other. And a very important question. And now we go to the great Ephraim, who writes, and I quote, "Could you tell us about the JDL and what happened to the organization? Why are we the JTF?" Unquote. Okay, great question. The JDL was a very holy organization that was responsible for the liberation of over 1 million Soviet Jews. And, of course, I had the honor of being national chairman during the peak of that campaign. The founder of our movement was Harav Mir Kahana, Zecher Tzaddik V'Kadosh Livracha, Hashem Yikom Damo. And it was an organization that gave hope to the Jewish people and restored Jewish pride and Jewish honor, and was an organization that represented what we call Kiddush Hashem. Kiddush Hashem means sanctifying God's name. Because when we struck at the Soviets and forced them to free our people from behind the Iron Curtain and forced an exodus that was almost like the biblical exodus from Egypt, when we did this with very limited resources, fighting against an empire, fighting for an issue that nobody paid attention to until JDL started doing what it did, and until we took the actions we took, nobody even paid attention to the issue of Soviet Jewry. Suddenly it became, because of our campaign, it became a front and center issue that the Soviets couldn't ignore. When we did this, we did something that was very important for the Jewish people. And it, of course, led to Kahanism and Rabbi Kahana becoming famous, which is the hope for the Jewish people. Kahanism is the hope for the Jewish people and for the righteous Gentiles. Now, unfortunately, Rabbi Kahana was murdered by Al-Qaeda in 1990. It was the first terrorist attack by Al-Qaeda. They knew that they had to get him out of the way in order to do what they planned to do, because he was the most effective person waking people up about the threat of Islam. And so they murdered him. It was their first action in 1990. I was in prison. I was serving a prison term for my activities in the JDL as the national chairman of the JDL. So I was in prison. Rabbi Kahana had been assassinated. In that vacuum came a very evil person named Irv Rubin, Yimash Movazichro, and his evil wife, Shelley, and evil people came, and they basically took the name and turned the organization into a monstrosity. They turned the JDL into an organization that supported Arik Sharon's monstrous expulsion of Jews from Gush Katif, an organization that betrayed the Jewish hero Jonathan Pollard. Irv Rubin went on the Merv Griffin show with 30 million viewers on national television and said that Jonathan Pollard should have gotten the death penalty. God forbid. They took an organization that had stood against black anti-Semitism, and instead they defended Jesse Jackson and said they want to work with rap artists, and called Rabbi Kahana and they called me racists, and said, "We're changing all of that. Now we're going to work together with blacks." They burned the Confederate flag to show that they're on the side of the blacks and that they now are going to do what the Hollywood Jews like, because they were trying to hit the Hollywood Jews up for money. I mean, it was just horrific. They gave honors and awards to Hollywood self-hating vicious Jew haters like Roseanne Barr. They gave her an award for being the proud Jewess and a Jewish heroine. Roseanne Barr, they gave her an award. Roseanne Barr, who called for the destruction of Israel, who said that Israel should never have been created, who dressed like Hitler and said she's putting Jews in the oven, she's baking Jew cookies in the ovens, and had a Hitler mustache and was joking about the murder of millions of Jewish babies and children who were thrown live in burning ovens by the Nazis, and she thought that was funny. And now she's part of Ralph Nader's political party, the Green Party. And she's called for the destruction of Israel. The JDL, Shelley Rubin and Irv Rubin's JDL, gave her an award. She was one of many people they gave awards to. They gave her an award because they wanted to hit her up for a check. No principles. Complete whores. I mean, just evil beyond words. I mean, rats and evil people beyond words. By the time I got out of prison, they already took over the... They got the name. They took over the trademark and everything else. I couldn't start JDL again because I was on probation when I got out of prison. I had a 5-year probation term in addition to the prison term I did. And one of the conditions of my probation was I could not be associated in any way with the JDL. I could no longer be associated with the JDL. That's why I started the Jewish Task Force, JTF. And that's why we're JTF. We are not the same as the JDL was. The JDL did engage and did break the law to save Soviet Jews. And I actually went out and bombed Soviet diplomatic targets to make sure the issue would get on page one. But JTF is different. The issues are different. We live in a different time with different issues. Those types of tactics would not work today. In post-9/11 America, those types of tactics would backfire. And so JTF is a completely law-abiding organization. And our movement in Israel, Hayamim HaMiti, is completely law-abiding. Through law-abiding means now, we have to reach the masses with our message. Because our message is the truth. That's what we seek to do. Anyway, thank you very much, Ephraim. And I want to thank everybody. As always, I love doing this program. I love speaking to our great JTFers. Until next week, Shalom.